Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry, and today I am your guest. Today I have a guest host filling in for me so that I can be interviewed. And, you know, I feel like I'm just not talking enough. I'm not talking about myself enough. Here I am restricting my talking to the public to an hour a week, and I really wanted to ramp it up and keep the focus on me. I'm kidding. There were some scheduling snafus, and so I thought I'd change it up for the week and have my dear friend Kate Gaffney step in and host for me. Kate is an actor, improviser, voiceover person, voiceover actor, you know what I'm saying. She's also the host of her own podcast called Service from Hell, which is very funny and great, and you should head over to iTunes right now before you even listen to this, and just go ahead and hit subscribe so you can listen to that later. Anyway, this was a lot of fun to record, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here you go. So we're flipping the script this week, as I definitely said in the intro. So this is my friend Kate Gaffney. What's up, Kate?
Oh, hey, everybody. This is my friend Lisa Curry that I'm interviewing. And, you know, what's great is about the fact that I'm not famous enough to be interviewed, but I'm just cool enough to interview her. So this podcast is going to go off the rails because I'm bitter about it. It's fine. Let's start on a high note. Here we go, everybody.
Here we go. Thank you so much for interviewing me for my own podcast so everyone can get to know Lisa Curry, which is what everybody's been, I'm sure, salivating for months now.
Oh, I've gotten several emails, and by several, I mean none, about, you know, what's Lisa's story? Because you've been around for a minute. So should we get started?
Everyone knows. Yeah. Everyone knows I'm very cagey about my story and don't talk about myself ever. So I think that this was like needed. Like, I felt like a pressure cooker. Like, all right, I'm finally ready to say.
Yeah. You've been worn down enough, and you're like, let's get intimate, audience. Yeah. Let's really let them know. Okay. Yeah. Well, this is Long Story Long, and Lisa Curry is who we're talking to. Lisa, let them know, where are you from? Because nobody knows that either. Because also, you've changed it a few times, because it used to be Chicago, and then you got more honest. So where are you actually
from?
Here's
the thing. So I used to say Chicago, which is a lie.
Full-blown
lie. To be fair, I grew up just outside of Chicago, like an hour out of Chicago, in Cedar Lake, Indiana, unless you know where Cedar Lake is. Whenever I say I'm from Indiana, people are like, Indianapolis? And I'm like, no, that's 4 hours from me. I'm like 40 minutes from Chicago, which is why I claim Chicago. But yeah, I'm from Cedar Lake, Indiana. That's where growing up happened. Actually, I'm kidding. That's growing up hasn't happened yet. Yeah, that's just where I aged.
Let's get honest. Okay, so Cedar Lake to Hollywood probably didn't happen when you were 2 years old. So what was the trajectory that was like, hey, Cedar Lake, Indiana is cool, but this ain't what I want. I don't want to build boats forever, even though you kind of do.
I don't know if I even had that first thought of like Cedar Lake is cool, but thanks. Shout out to that town. Yeah, I wanted to get the hell out of the Midwest. I wanted to, you know, see what's out there in the world. I went to Purdue for a year, and then I moved to LA after that, dropped out of college. And no student debt, not to brag or anything, everyone.
Hardcore flex.
I'm just not drowning in hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. Yeah, went to Purdue for a year, and then left because I felt like I was trying to live up to my parents' expectations instead of my own.
What did you think? Did they articulate what their expectations were to you? What do you mean by that?
No. no one says anything directly in my family. It was just kind of like understood that I should get a job, whatever that is, like get a respectable job. So I was going to school for political science. I really wanted to just work in government.
Interesting.
Truly, that's what I wanted to do initially. And then it just kind of hit me over the course of my first year. I was like, I just want to have fun. I don't want to be serious. I don't want to have a serious career. I want to fuck off and act like a jackass all the time. And you know what? They let you do that in Los Angeles. So I moved to LA after a year of school.
No, mm-hmm. You're pausing. That's not okay. Because this is you do this to your brand a lot. Because you just call it fucking off, and you're one of the hardest workers I know. So that's not fair.
Well, thank you.
So what actually, it wasn't like I want to go fuck off and live in one of the most expensive, most difficult cities in the most difficult industry with the least percentage of success on the planet. So let's rewind a hair.
I don't think I took any of those. I wasn't like weighing all of that. I wasn't like, dang, it's going to be real expensive out there. I was just like, here's the mentality that took me to Los Angeles. I thought, I think it's crazy that people go on vacation. Like, people, for the most part, most people work their jobs that they hate, right? And then they just can't wait for the weekend, or they can't wait for a vacation they have for a week, a year. And I thought, why would you go on vacation for only a week, a year? Why don't you just go to where you would be on vacation and stay there?
So that was really what took you to LA?
100% what took me to LA.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I thought, where would I want to go on vacation? LA. Great. I'll just go there and stay.
Okay. So stand-up comedy was not on your radar yet then at that
point? Not at all. Like, growing up, I didn't think stand-up was a job. I thought it was like something you were anointed into. You know, like, I don't remember ever watching just straight up stand-up. Like, my parents were really into comedy. My mom's parents were really into comedy, but it was a lot of like sitcoms. We watched a ton of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson when I was a kid. And then my parents later got into Seinfeld. And so in my mind, I was like, Johnny Carson is a comedian. Jerry Seinfeld is a comedian. And that's just it. Like, I didn't even, I think I watched a lot of I Love Lucy and Carol Burnett Show and stuff when I was a kid, but I think, and I don't, this is probably also like, you know, sexist, and like, my brain was probably programmed to be, to think sexist things. But I didn't even think of like Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett as comedians when I was a kid. Cause I was like, oh, they're doing sketches and stuff. They're being silly within those confines. So they're actors. And I wasn't thinking, I mean, I guess stand-up comedian is also different than like sketch comedian. But none of that seemed real to me. It all just seemed like, I don't, like, you don't move to Rome to become the Pope, you know? Like, why, how would you move somewhere to become a comedian? Like, it didn't make sense to me.
Well, and I think if you don't have the foundation laid in front of you of people in your mm-hmm. family, like the nepotism that makes it seem possible, it doesn't yeah. seem possible. So you yeah. get, you fly, or you drive into LA, and you do that very quickly. That story is insane. And so you get to LA, and you're, so where, when does stand up get on your radar? When does anything in entertainment get on your radar? Because if you just picked a vacation spot, was it like, oh, I mean, I'm surrounded like, by it?
The vacation thing was kind of the mentality that moved me to Los Angeles, but I wanted to pursue acting. That's what I initially moved out for. I was so scared of failing. And I also didn't, I couldn't understand like how do you get from A to C, you know? Like, I think it's also really hard to understand, like, when you're from a working class background, working class family, like, you don't understand like how you can create an entire career out of thin air, out of nothing. And I think I just couldn't see how to get things going, you know, or like how to build momentum. So I came out and I took a couple acting classes, but I was just like, this isn't realistic. Because I thought like, what I'm in this class with all these dipshits, and we're doing scenes from movies that came out 40 years ago that no one cares about. And I just like, I was like, I don't understand how, like, you go to a casting, also auditioning, you go to an audition, and there's 90 people in the room that look like you, but like a little bit better. Like, maybe they have the a better haircut or nicer clothes or whatever. And you're like, oh, this isn't, I'm not. Like, at least when you're in, when you're growing up and you're like the last to get picked for something, like if you're the last to get picked, you're still getting picked. You're on the team. It's like, you can be not the best. You don't have to be the best at basketball to be on a basketball team. But when you're acting, it's like you have to be the one they choose. The one. They're not picking a team. You're not sitting on the bench for a commercial. Okay. Like, you're either in it or you're not. And I think that I was just like, this feels crazy. I don't know how to do this. And so I spent a lot of my time when I first moved to Los Angeles just kind of like waffling back and forth of like, I would take an acting class and I would get headshots printed, and then I would focus all of my energy on like, I should take a business class, or I should get into advertising or something. Like, I should do something that feels like a career, because it didn't feel like, it felt like a fantasy I was having, you know? Especially like, you see a lot of people when you move to LA, that there's a lot of cautionary tales where, like, you know, you're working at Starbucks and you're on the grind and you're fucking 19 and someone comes in and they're like, oh, I used to act. And you're like, what?
Oh, God.
And they look like they just got hit by a bus. And you're like, are you okay, man? And they're like, oh, I pursued acting for a little while. And now I manage a Joann Fabrics. Get out while you can, kid. And you're like, what?
Which, fuck you, though. Because then you step into an industry where, like, people that look rode hard and put away wet become famous because they're funny. Like, not a lot of comics are the queens and kings of health.
No. Well, that's a lot of what drove me into comedy. Well, one, I like it. I love comedy. But part of what pushed me into comedy was, like, I was in this scene study class years ago with this woman, Carrie Dobro, who I really liked. She was great. And this was at a time when I was super fit. I was doing like 2-a-days. And she was like, you're like a leading lady type. And that scared the fucking shit out of me because I was like, that means I can't age. That means I can't gain weight. That means I can't cut my hair or like have any fun with my like that puts me in a box. And that I don't like that. I don't like that at all. And so I think that, I mean, thanks, but that made me want to get the fuck out of there because I was like, oh, you just told me I have a limited amount of time to cash in on whatever I'm going to do. Like there's a finite amount of time which there isn't. We all know like a lot of people get a break later, but there is a very real thing, especially with women where only with women, where it's like, if you don't have some heat by the time you're, you know, 25. 14 months old, it's like, if networks aren't picking you up by the time your mother is crowning at your birth, forget it. Get out of here.
Forget it. Pack your shit, baby.
It's like, here comes a leading lady. Oh, and there's no interest. Goodbye. And they just cut the umbilical cord and they just throw you in the trash. Like, that's what it feels like.
Judy Garland probably fell that way. RIP. All right. So, yeah. So you're like, don't put me in this box. I want to go where the Neanderthals are, right? Because it was more freedom.
Yeah, way more freedom. Because I was like, oh, I think my biggest thing at that point, what I was thinking was like, I don't know how long this is going to take. But so far it seems like it's going to be a long ass ride. And I want time to breathe and be a normal person. I mean, you and I both travel quite a bit, not to brag again. That's something you can do if you don't have student debt is you can travel.
flex.
Everyone, if you're listening to this and you're in college, drop out. It's not worth it. no one respects you more than they respect me. I promise you. get out of there. Take your student loans and go to fucking Europe or something. I was like, I want to have a full life. And I think that that's also something that's been important to me through comedy is like, sometimes I feel like, oh, I could work a little bit harder or I could focus more of my energy and resources and whatever to just comedy and just getting successful and just making money. But I'm like, what if I die in a year? I mean, like that's a really dark way to think of it, but it's also like, we're not guaranteed any of this time. I would hate to just be on the grind for like 10 years and have no life experiences and also no career. Because a career is not guaranteed. It doesn't matter how hard you work or how talented you are. That shit is not guaranteed. It's something that you hope for and that you work towards, but that's all you can do is hope and work towards it and just like give it your best shot. So it's like, in the meantime, you have to do other things. You have to have a fucking life.
Well, because then where do you get your material for stand-up? You can see the comics who get progressively more famous to be, critical of them. A lot of their comedy suffers as a result because, no, I can't relate to you now that you're a millionaire. So if you're not out in and amongst the people figuring out a way to at least connect to others and tell me those stories, I don't care that your Lamborghini has a flat tire. There's no way I will ever be able to attach to that. And so I agree with you that it probably fed your comedy the whole time that you were out being a person.
I mean, I guess we'll see. Buy my album, everyone.
what? I teed you up for a plug? I'm a good host. No,
I think that's a real thing. Like, people often say, like, the worst thing for a comedian is success. Because you become isolated. But lucky for me, I'm still broke. So that's this is why my comedy is thriving. Oh, what's that? It's not? Okay.
Oh, crickets. Okay, so yeah. So you're like, I don't want to be in a box. I want to do more. But then how did stand-up get on your radar? I mean, I know you said, you know, you watch the Tonight Show and stuff, but even that conceptually, I think, is really hard to think of yourself behind a mic, because I was at your very first stand-up show. And so I want to know, how'd you get there?
You're like, how did you get there? And why did they let you do that?
Facts. It was brutal.
It started from Second City. Here's like, just a weird trajectory. Like, I was working at Starbucks when I first moved to LA.
Robbing
first
them blind.
What did you say?
Robbing them blind.
At one point, my manager stopped me and she's like, "You can't just give free coffee to every cute guy who walks in here." And I was like,
"This is a business."
I didn't see that in the handbook. I don't think I would have accepted this job. Yeah, if you were like hot and you came into my Starbucks, you weren't paying. I just so thirsty all the time. Did it work out for me?
Still thirsty.
No, it didn't. First of all, I got caught working. I got stuck working in a cult when I first moved to LA.
That's right.
Like this multi-level marketing thing. It was like a thing where I made cash every day. So I was like, once you're making cash every day, it's very hard to get out of that, because you're like, you're not making thousands of dollars of cash every day. You're making $45. And so you're like, I have to make cash again tomorrow. I can't take a day off and go apply anywhere. So I'm stuck in this thing, in this multi-level marketing cult. And there's a hiring fair for Starbucks. And I'm driving to like find somewhere to have lunch. And I see this hiring fair and I peel it to the parking lot like a psycho. And I went in and I filled out the application as fast as I could. And I sit down with the manager and she's like, "So tell me about yourself," like just super sweet and gentle. We're still connected on social media. "What's up, Jen? You saved my life." Aww. And she's like, "So what brings you in?" And I was like, "Please help me. I'm in a cult. I can't get out." She was like, Oh my. And I was like, I'm a hard worker. I've had a ton of experience. I'm like, I learn fast, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I had to come in because we only have our lunch breaks. And she hired me on the spot.
Bless her heart.
Bless her. So if you're in a cult, just like on your lunch break, pop go to Starbucks. They'll hire you.
Best advice ever. Okay. Yeah.
And then working there, I met our friend AJ, who was also working at Hard Rock, who got me to work at Hard Rock. She literally physically brought me in, because as you know, like, restaurant jobs are so competitive in LA. So she physically drove me in, got me hired. From there, I met this woman who used to bartend at Hard Rock, who was doing Second City at the time. And so she was like, "You should sign up for Second City." And I was terrified of stand-up, or stand-up, and, well, I was terrified of stand-up. I was terrified of improv. And I literally signed up for Second City, not because I wanted to do improv, but because I was scared of it. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm an adult and I am scared of doing stupid little games with people. Wow. What is wrong with me? And I thought, pull yourself together, Lisa. You need to take improv, because you can't be scared of fucking improv. That's so dumb. So that's the narration that was going on in my head.
Super
I signed
healthy.
Up for Second City. Super good.
Yeah.
Super good. Like, if you can berate yourself into being successful, recommend.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. So I do that. I get into Second City. I end up really liking it. I get in. I didn't like, I'm not saying I get in like I got passed. Okay. If you give them money, they'll let you perform there.
even if you're riddled with toxic shame, you can still get
true,
in the door.
That's true of any place. If you pull up to a Home Depot and you're like, "Here's $550. Do you mind if I do an improv show here?" They're going to let you. Okay.
Yes. They're like, "We'll build you a stage. Actually, we got the crew."
Literally anywhere. As a matter of fact, I think that gives me an idea. I think I'm going to start charging people to do improv in my living room.
We got to keep it moving.
We have a whole business model.
Nope, yep, anyway. Keep going.
So moving on. So I,
so you're getting your feet wet at Second City and you're like, oh, okay, improv is not as scary as I initially thought. And are
it's terrifying.
You were still scared.
Oh, I'm still scared of it now. I'll do it. It's fun. Cause here's what's scary is like, you could be just on the back wall minding your own business and somebody points to you and is like, oh, here comes my dog. And then you're like, son of a bitch, I've got to fucking act like a dog right now. My ex is in the audience. Are you joking?
You know? But the thing that you're scared of with improv is the reverse of that is what most people are scared of with stand-up, because stand-up, it's like when you start drowning, you don't have a life preserver that is being handed to you by anybody else. It's like, you better get out of this joke because everyone hates you. Whereas with improv, you might be a dog for 30 seconds, but then the next scene you could be Queen of England. So I feel
you haven't been on the improv teams I've been on. Those people will leave your ass a dog the whole scene. Dog for the whole term, actually.
Listen, we're not here to work through your trauma that you're mad at your team. Let's keep it moving. So you're like, stop making me a dog in a scene. I want to go do stand-up.
Wish I had said that. No, I started stand-up because, and I don't know if you experienced this at Second City.
Probably.
Or, you know, but it felt like there was a handful of people there that had done stand-up, and they talked about it like, they talked about it with the same energy as a person who just like walks into your house smoking a cigarette. They're like, yeah, I did stand-up.
Yeah.
Like they fucking did time, and you're like, ooh, the street cred you have, you know, like they've been stabbed or something. And I thought, I want that. I want to be like cool or whatever. And so I just decided, I was like, I'm going to do stand up before my next birthday. And I was like, you know, I ended up doing it like 4 days before my birthday, because I was like, there's no, like the days kept passing and I was like, well, I still have time.
96 hours.
Yeah. And then I went and tried it for the first time and fucking immediately loved it. I was like, oh, this is great. Because, you know, I've control issues, and that's a place where I can just be in control.
I mean, I get that, and I think that's why the people that love, maybe is part of why the people that love stand-up love it. But the fact that you loved that show, I just want to paint a picture for your audience.
I don't remember the first show. I remember the first time I did stand-up, but I don't remember the first. Is this the thing that was in the Valley?
Yes. Was this not that was not the very first time?
That wasn't my very first time doing stand-up, but I think that was maybe my first booked show.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yikes. I vaguely remember it the same way you like vaguely remember the moments before having a concussion. Same thing.
Well, I can just say I remember it pristinely, because I was like, the thought of doing what she is doing in front of people that, yeah, like I was like, it wasn't even just your fault that you were new at stand-up. It was that the venue was not set up to be geared towards the stage. People were sitting at their own tables eating kebabs and like just having their own conversations. Mm-hmm. And they made the room so dark at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday.
I remember it was dark and very narrow, right?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was not logical at all. So people didn't really know there was a stand-up show going on. The fact that you were still getting that like good hit off of that shows that everybody in comedy is mentally unwell, because the thought of performing in that environment makes me want to walk out into traffic. And you were like, best day ever. What? What? Like, I don't get it.
Listen, when you've been hit in the head, that feels like a good day. Okay. Being on stage under the worst circumstances.
Okay. So get us closer. So you start, so you're performing regularly, because like you get your bit. Now you're in. Mm-hmm. Now do you abandon improv altogether and you're full blown now your comedy and that's it? Or stand up?
No, I'll still do an improv show right now if anyone wants
don't,
me to.
No, unless we want you to be a dog. No, no, no.
I hate you. I just thought, for me, it seemed like, you know, at the time I was working, I don't know, probably 9 jobs at once. And so I'm like, well, I'm working during the day 7 days a week, literally. 7 days a week, 362 days a year. Okay. And I thought, well, only my nights are open and I can split my time between improv and stand-up, or I can choose one and really fucking go at it. Because it's like, you know, if you're doing stand-up and you're only getting up twice a week because you have improv shows the rest of the week, like, what are you doing? You know, it's not what are you doing? That's not the right thing. But like, you're just not going to get as good at stand-up. And it just seemed like the clearer path to having a career in comedy, because it felt like for improv at the time, my perception was, if you choose improv, you can maybe get cast to improvise on the Norwegian cruises with Second City, or you just do free shows for the rest of your life. And I was like, it's the same reason why SNL was never a goal of mine, because I'm like, I can't have only one avenue to success. The odds are too crazy. And there's so many people that are incredibly talented. And I'm like, I am not the top 1% of performers. I don't even know if I'm the top 10% of improv performers. So it's like, just the odds are, especially Second City is very formulaic. And it's like, you're going to have, if there's a team of five, it's going to be two guys. It's going to be a blonde woman, a brunette woman, and a black person. That's the formula forever and ever. And whatever, that's their thing. I'm not going to even speak to that. But I'm like,
keep it moving.
I'm, in order for that to be a viable career choice, I have to be the best blonde white woman, because they're only going to have one blonde white woman. And I'm like, that's not, I don't think that I'm going to do that.
I never thought of it like that. That's not even, I think you have to have some delusions of grandeur if you are in the grind, but I do think that realistic perspective of actually seeing the formula with which they are operating, as they're, you know, as they're not mm-hmm. the only school that operates with the formula, but to operate with the formula and know your own limitations is really important. Mm-hmm. So then you do that math and you're like, okay, cool. I'm not grinding like this forever. I'm about to move over to this other grind.
Yeah. Cause I thought, well, with stand up can turn into a lot of things. Stand up can turn into your own sitcom. Stand up can turn into an acting career or voiceover or being on the road or like there's so many ways to go with that, where it's like, you're not making a living doing improv unless you're dudes from, what's it called? From Whose Line Is It Anyway? Unless you're them. Those are the only people making a living getting paid for improvising, you know? And it's like, it just seemed like there were so many more opportunities. And I'm like, I have to, it's like when you go to a carnival and you play the mouse game. Are you familiar with the mouse game?
I am, but I think you should explain it. I'm from a country town too.
The mouse game, first of all,
so ridiculous.
I could have gone to college if I had saved my money that I spent on the mouse game.
That's the one that got you? Oh, you're insane.
Whenever I would go to a carnival, direct to the mouse game. Like, it was a thing. Like, my grandparents would take me to the county fair and
choking.
Just spend all day at the mouse game.
That's the whole day.
So the mouse game is like, there's like a, it's horrible. This is, it's PETA
mean.
Would
yeah, it's mean.
Lose it.
I'm dying.
So there's like this giant wheel, right? With all these like,
live
it's like
mice.
The Wheel of Fortune wheel, right? So all these panels are colored and there's a hole in each one of them and they throw a mouse into it. And
the mouse
spin the wheel, a live mouse. Yeah, well, not a dead one. I don't think that would get me to stop playing though, if we're being honest.
Of course not.
So,
oh my God.
Wait,
so they spin the wheel and there's the holes.
They spin the wheel, there's the holes. They toss. It's an underhand, okay?
Aggressively chucked.
They toss a live mouse into the mouse game and then it runs and it falls into one of the holes or it climbs into one of the,
because
I don't know,
it's
business,
dizzy,
okay?
Right? Because it spun around too.
Yeah, oh yeah. That mouse is like, fuck this, how do I get out of here? And it's like, surprise, bitch, you just climbed into a drawer. Those are all drawers. So it would be like color coordinated. So it would be like on light blue or something. And if you had a quarter on light blue, then you win a prize. So what you do with the mouse game, my strategy was to just put a quarter on everything. So you spend, I mean, you're talking like $4 per game. to win something that really you could have bought at a gas station for 90 cents.
In your karma, like a mouse is, you're going to become a mouse in your next life that has to do the mouse game. Yeah. Okay, wait, why did we bring up the mouse game? You brought it up for a reason in relation to stand-up.
Oh, this is what, that's what my career feels like.
Wait, are you the mouse or are you the person betting on the court, like putting the quarters everywhere?
I'm the mouse, but the mouse is dead. I'm saying stand-up felt more like the mouse game where I'm like, all right, I can put, I'm me, I'm the quarter, right?
Yeah.
That's me moving through my career. And there's a lot of different colors. There's a lot of different avenues okay. that this mouse might, the mouse is Lorne Michaels. You're not.
Oh my God, I hope you regret saying that. I'm crying.
I mean, hypothetically.
I just love that you're not the mouse. Like, if I were going to tell this story, I'm the mouse. I love that you're the quarter.
Well, I think I'm the quarter because that's where I'm hedging my bets.
On just wherever you, like, wherever the mouse goes through. So whatever. So the mouse represents the people that could pick you.
Yes, yes.
This is
yes,
a great metaphor.
Exactly.
The audience is following along.
This is
Everyone's
a really
a
messy
time.
Metaphor. Yeah. The point is, regardless of which piece of this I am, my grandma's still looking over my shoulder disappointingly, okay? That's
May she rest. Happened. She's still looking over your shoulder disappointingly.
She's like, get it together. I'm kidding. She's like the only person that ever supported it. So the mouse game or my career.
But mostly the mouse game. Okay, oh my God,
so,
get focused.
So yeah, so stand-up just feels like there's more places to bet on. There's sure. more, and you can move that quarter around because they're going to throw the mouse in the thing and it's going to jump into red next time and not light blue. And so, like, if you just wait long enough, the fucking block that your quarter is on, time will be up. This doesn't make any sense to anyone who didn't grow up half a carny, so
or half feral. But yeah. I do think this is an important illustration because I think a lot of times people just think there is one sort of path, and if you're not on that path, then that's why you didn't get, you know, chosen mm-hmm. to be part of entertainment. But I think what's true for people not in entertainment, and something they need to know, is that it is so very often throwing wet paper towels or mice against a wall and seeing what sticks and saying, oh, okay, mm-hmm. well, you know, I tried this thing.
I'm just chucking mice at the
just
wall.
Just chucking mice. And, oh, look, that mouse is stuck. And I do think that that's what entertainment is. But you feel like comedy or being a stand-up comic opened more opportunities to throw those wet paper towels against the wall. Whereas had yeah. you gone the traditional audition route of acting, that you would have just been in one lane and kind of stuck.
Yeah, because when you're acting, if you're just acting, you're not writing. You are dependent on somebody picking you.
Yeah.
I just had a friend today text me devastated because he screen tested for a role, thought he was going to get it. And unfortunately, they went with the other person. And it's like over $1 million gone. And that's not to say he's not just, he's doing a lot of stuff. He's great. And a good friend. And
so you'd interview him. He's famous enough to be interviewed, but not.
No.
Right. Right. Okay.
No.
Keep going. But he's devastated.
I'm not even famous enough to be interviewed, but
that's true.
You know, whatever.
Here we are.
So stand-up just can lead to so much more because you're writing and performing at once. And so you fit into more categories. So you can make your own content and make your own way, but you can also tee yourself up to be chosen for someone else's project.
It is nice. Does it scare you? I mean, I know you've been in the game for a minute mm-hmm. now, but does it still, did it ever scare you the way that improv did?
No.
Never.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because I'm like, the thing is, like, when you've been, we'll say moderately verbally abused.
sort of.
You like, I don't, shit just doesn't really bother me. Like if somebody says something shitty to me, I'm like, okay. I mean, like, I might get pissed off, but if I'm on stage and there's like, if people don't laugh at my jokes, I'm like, all right, well then I guess I'm going to rewrite that. Like, it's not, I guess also, like, I don't think of anything I'm saying, anything I'm saying on stage as, like, my magnum opus. I'm never like, you know, if they don't like this bit, I'm just crushed. I'm like, well, if you don't like this, then I have something else. I'm also like, I don't know, I can make your grandma laugh. I can make kids laugh. I think I have enough validation from the people I have made laugh that if some jagoff in Kansas City doesn't like me, I'm like, okay, well, fine.
So that, so you don't feel an association with the audience's approval leading to larger opportunities. You're doing the kind of comedy where you're like, if I make the people that I want to make laugh, that's enough for you?
Yes and no. To your question about like whether I think, you know, making people laugh leads to greater opportunities, I do, but I think it's more in the abstract. I think it's more like, if you like me enough, you'll sign up on my, like, if I get you to laugh, you might sign up on my mailing list, which might mean next time I'm back here, you could possibly buy a ticket. Now, if you add up enough maybes, you have a lot of solid things. But I think it's not as like, it doesn't feel like as much of a direct connection where I'm like, if some people don't think I'm funny, then that's fine, I guess. I also feel like, I mean, I'm on Twitter a lot and I feel validation from some of the people. I mean, some people that I've looked up to forever since I knew what the fuck comedy was, follow me on Twitter. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, if Adam McKay thinks I'm funny, then do I give a shit if Bob in Bowling Green thinks I'm funny? No. But I also like have a kind of a, it's not even like a fuck you to Bob. It's more like a Zen thing. Like, hey, everybody's not for everybody. There are people who other people love who I don't think are funny at all, but that's fine. That doesn't mean they're not funny. It means I think they're not funny and it doesn't matter. Like my opinion doesn't matter to them, you know?
Did that grow over time where you became more Zen with it or was, oh, yeah. You always had that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, it took a lot of building up validation from other people and also realizing, ironically, realizing how little my opinion matters to anyone else's growth and career really helped me understand that other people's negative opinions of me truly don't matter. You know?
Yeah, there's a philosophy for artists where they say that don't ride your best review and don't ride your worst, because if you start to believe your hype or your criticism, you're mm-hmm. done. You just have to ride that middle of just never getting too high or too low. But I mean, my God, like, good luck. I don't know. Yeah,
because like I'm the most manic. I'm like, you know. One day I'm like, somebody said this nice thing to me, which means I'll be a millionaire by the end of the week, you know, and it's like, and I'm not always in control of, I don't always have a good grasp on not letting things hurt my feelings.
Sure.
But, you know, I do have a handful of things, like nice things that people I care about have said that just kind of sit in the back of my head like a little bank. You know, that I can reach and be like, oh, well, so-and-so emailed me and said this, so.
And that really does work for you.
I guess it doesn't matter. Most of the time.
I find that really impressive because I find that enormously difficult to not want to, you know, write a response to the meanest thing ever said. Like, and to just not want to attack. It's very interesting that you're able to just, you know, I guess ride that middle. So with comedy, do you feel like you have, because to go back to what you were saying earlier about mm-hmm. when you were told you were an ingenue and now, and you're like, that's, you know, that's going to lock me into a box because I'm so fucking hot.
I wasn't told I was an ingenue. I just was told I was leading lady, which I think, by the way, is code for blonde white lady. I think that means like.
Or it used to be. Yeah.
Because okay, we're talking, this is like 15 years ago, somebody says this to me. This is, you know, before Twitter and whatever. So I think this is when people weren't really getting much of a clue.
So, So you were like, comedy will allow me to have way more doors open. And have you found, if you were to look at your friends that are actors, like the friend you just brought up who screen tested mm-hmm. for something. So for people who don't work in the industry, that's huge. That means it's basically down to you and maybe two other people for something mm-hmm. huge. So do you see you hear those kinds of stories and you feel validated in the fact that you chose comedy and feel like your gut feeling was right, that yes, this has allowed you to have many more options? Or do you feel...
Whenever I hear stories like that from friends, I just like really feel for them. I don't think I've thought of it in terms of my decision making in relation to that. But I like... Now that you say that, I do recognize, like, I could bomb an audition or a showcase. I auditioned for JFL last year and I didn't get it. But it's like, okay, so I auditioned for JFL and I didn't get it. And then I released an album and then I released my podcast on Sirius. And like, you always have something else to distract you. And it's also like, I think it's also easier for me because when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be doing, you know? And so it's not like I've had JFL up on a vision board for 20 years or 30 years or whatever. I mean, not 30 years, obviously. I'm 17 years old, but like...
Fetus. You're an actual fetus.
Yeah. It's easier for me a lot of times because I feel like I'm just so naive in a way that helps me, where I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that that was an opportunity or that was something available to me. So not knowing about it until it's presented to you takes a lot of the weight off of it, because it's not like, I mean, God, I like, my heart hurts for people that are like, I've been watching SNL since I was 2 years old and this is my one dream. And because I'm like, there's literally a man in charge of it. One fucking guy. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't like you, because maybe he had indigestion that day or whatever. Like, it has nothing to do with your talent. But if that is your dream, I'm like, that makes me so uncomfortable to think of, you know, because it's so out of your hands.
Yeah. And I think it gives disproportionate amount of power to one person or one mm-hmm. experience, or, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, former cast members who could say, well, it didn't really launch me into anything else. But I think it is, you're right. If you have this concept of something from when you're like 2 or 5 or whatever, of like, this is the thing, I think mm-hmm. you then have a narrative around it and you sort of mythologize it and make it big.
Yes, absolutely.
So you didn't have to step into mythology. You were just like, I want to go on vacation and get me the fuck out of Cedar Lake, Chicago, wherever the hell I'm from, you know? And you were just like, let me get out of it. And I think that allows you to also be objective in what you mm-hmm. In your understanding of, okay, I get how this system works and here's how I have better odds. I think that's actually really smart. And so,
oh, thank you.
I mean, I didn't say you're smart. I just said that thing.
I knew that was coming. I knew it.
Let's get really clear.
Listen, no one's ever going to be as important to me as the person running the mouse game. So
that is your Lorne Michaels. Okay.
So good luck. Good luck, Lorne. I could care less. Are you a carny? I didn't think so. Then you're not really in charge of my destiny, are you?
Okay. So if you were looking ahead to your career and you're like, mm-hmm. all right, the next, you know, whatever, I don't want to put a timeline on it, but like looking ahead, would there be something that you could achieve that would be such a pinnacle for you that you would then want to step away from comedy and be like, I've done it. I reached the top of the mountain. I'm going to try something else.
No, I want to do stand up until the day I die. I also just like making people laugh in whatever situation. So I'm like, I can't imagine like being in a nursing home and just like suddenly being serious. Like, no way. There will be jokes when you're wiping my ass. It's coming.
You're going to have the hottest mic at the fucking rocking chair nursing home.
Yeah. And they're like, please, somebody's just going to come in and put a pillow on my face. Like, we have to, for the good of the community. We can't let this go on
for the people.
Longer. I mean, there's things that I want, but I think I have also like an insatiable desire to achieve things. So I think like I would shoot someone for an Emmy. If that is a category, enter me now. I'm going to shoot someone.
Best actual murder.
Yeah. I mean, it could be in a roundabout way. I could shoot somebody and then get a Netflix documentary, and then that could win an Emmy. But I don't think I would be the Emmy winner in that case.
It
could be whoever compiled it, which is so unfair. Whatever. like, who, you stole all of this material from this cult leader or psychopath
get
or whatever.
Focused, anyway. Lisa Curry. I brought up murder and I derailed you. It's my fault.
Like, I would love to win an Emmy, but I feel like if I won an Emmy, then I'd be like, well, now that I have an Emmy, now it doesn't mean anything because they gave one to me. Now I've got to win a fucking Mark Twain prize. And then if I get a Mark Twain prize, then I'd be like, wow, this thing is garbage. Now I've got to win a Nobel Prize. Like, it would like, it's never going to end until I'm the Pope King of the president, you know, like I don't.
Yeah, I think you called it president of the world once is a job you had said that you're gunning for. So
okay. I'm going to be the president, pope, king of the world.
King of the world. Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I literally thought of buying land in Scotland so that I could be Lady Lisa Curry, because you can't be a fucking lord apparently when you're a woman, but whatever. I just want titles and accolades.
Okay, well, there's never
and there's
a true
so
sentence.
Many. There's so many. There's not. It's like people collecting Pokemon. It's the same thing, except it's titles and awards.
You're so aware of your brand. I'm very proud of you. I just hit the mic. Sorry. Has there been a moment in your career, or have there been multiple moments where you have said, "That's it, I'm out"?
No.
You've never wanted to quit.
No.
Wow. Really.
I don't know if that makes me mentally
yes,
ill.
Yes, absolutely.
I haven't wanted to quit. I've wanted to. The way my brain reacts is when things are the hardest, it makes me want to work harder. Like, not, and maybe not like, not work harder in the same way, but for example, I had a rough patch earlier this year.
What?
I was not having a fun one in quarantine. And so I was like, it makes me fearless, because then I'm like, well, fuck it. Now I'm going to start emailing. Now I'm going to start DMing my heroes, and I'm going to start emailing people, and I'm going to start pitching my project, and I'm going to do a voiceover reel, and I'm going to create this other show. And it was like, it fuels me in that way.
Wow. That's not the case for me. So I'm very impressed that you use that to fill your gas tank, all that rejection and pain. Well done, Lisa Curry.
It's I'm just like fueled by spite and anger. So like, when things aren't going well, I'm like, oh, I will fucking show you. You thought that you could beat me down? Here I am in your DMs asking for favors now.
You just peek over the hedge.
The most psychotic thing. That's how I approach my enemies. I'm like, I will make you work for me.
Do you ever look around at people of your peer group and see people getting opportunities and think, wow, fuck that, they didn't deserve that?
I think I used to. And then in the last few years, it just kind of changed where I'm like, I think I started to see how political things are, because it is very political. And it's also like, here's a thing I realized and took note of in my own little brain, is I thought, anytime I think like, that person, I can't believe they got that thing. And I'm like, oh, hold on a second. I don't know what work they've been doing. I may have seen them at two shows this year where they ate shit. I don't know what else they're doing. They could be working their fucking ass off round the clock. And I don't know that, because I don't know them. And it's not my business. And I need to focus on my own shit. And it's like, you know, like, if I see somebody that gets something that I'm like, I'll say, where it feels like maybe they're not ready for that opportunity, instead of feeling spiteful, I now feel inspired, because I'm like, oh, well, if I feel that I'm ready for that, but they're not, then why aren't I going after that? I need to get after it. And I need to get that too. You know, which feels shitty in its own way. Like, ugh, well, if she could do it, then certainly I could. But it's like kind of a watered down version of that. Like, oh, well, maybe they went after that a little bit harder than me.
Yeah, you know? I don't think it's not coming across with vitriol. It's coming across as, oh shit, I didn't shoot my shot enough in a way that I could have, because that person who doesn't have as much experience went ahead and shot their shot and it worked out. So what am I doing holding myself back?
Exactly. Which I think is the case a lot of times when people have that bitterness. I've noticed with I've noticed that certain people, when they get so angry that somebody else has something, I'm like, oh, that's because you didn't even apply for that. Why are you mad? Go apply for it. If you think you're a better fit, that you might be. Get after it, you know? And I think it was kind of doing like an honest assessment of what I was going after, you know? I think that's really what it was.
How do you stay then? Because I've seen, just as an observer on the casual outside, I've seen so much, especially in comedy, backstabbing and, you know, shit talking mm-hmm. about, you know, this comic who got this thing, and just that mm-hmm. negative sort of toxic energy thrives in entertainment, but I've seen it really yeah. thrive in stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
How do you, because you need to maintain this peer group, because you got to rub shoulders with the people that mm-hmm. are also working. So how do you, apart from just being like, you know, I can detach from the need to get the laugh validation, how do you maintain relationships with people that are I'm not saying all your friends are toxic, they're yeah, not, yeah. but how do you maintain that friendly level of banter and get in the mix with people, but not get bogged down by their narrative or their fear or their, you know, hate?
I think one, I might try to reel in the conversation if it's really going hard on somebody. Or talk about something else. But I also made adjustments in the last couple of years where I don't expect everything from everyone. Meaning like some people are super funny and smart and also a great listener and a good friend and somebody you'd want to spend the holidays with and somebody you might want to go on vacation with or whatever. And that's going to be very, very few people. I used to get upset and think like, why can't everybody just be cool? And it's like, instead of thinking of it like, why aren't they meeting my expectations? I flipped it to like, oh, we just don't vibe. Like me and that person, let's say there's like 10 different wavelengths to a personality and one of them is comedy. And it's like, we connect on comedy and we don't connect on the rest, and that's fine. So we've got comedy. So I show up at a show, we can cut it up for a minute and then I'm out of there. And I'm not gonna ask you to pick me up when I have a flat tire. I'm not gonna expect you to help promote my show. I'm gonna expect zero out of you. And just not care. Like I don't, even like doing this podcast, I've had people promote it different. I don't ask for people to promote it any certain way. And I notice like one person might just hit a retweet. One person might be like, hey, subscribe to this podcast I did. It was super fun, blah, blah, blah. And I just let people be whoever they are. And I don't expect anything from them. And then I'm not disappointed. And I'm just like, all right, cool. Well, they were on and they didn't promote it. And that's their business. And maybe that's on me to work harder and make this more fun. You know, like I don't, and not to like put blame on myself, but I'm just like, and part of this is ego, because here you go. Part of me is like, well, I'm operating at X level where I'm like trying to do my best all the time and like trying to give everything 100%. And if somebody else isn't doing that, I'm not their fucking coach. You know, I'm not their shaman. I'm not pushing them to, if you want to give 40%, give 40%. I don't care. I stopped letting that feel like a reflection of me. You know what I mean? Like other people's interactions with me, I no longer think of as something I'm responsible for.
Well, I mean, this is really good life advice. I mean, I think no matter what your career choice, you didn't come up with it. Other people come up with it. You're just quoting people, but it's fine. But I think especially
not in therapy. Okay. Thank you.
Your therapist is amazing.
Therapist is nuts.
I think especially in entertainment, it is easy to pin all of the problematic personalities on entertainment or on mm-hmm. a specific city. And I think that's not true. I think that there are maybe more in entertainment, but I do think you need this level of detachment in whatever job you're in, because you're not going to have perfect coworkers or perfect.
Well, and it's also like to that point, what you're saying right now, like, I think, is there a little bit more crazy in entertainment? Absolutely. There's more egos. There's more, which also, to be fair, each of us is responsible for promoting ourselves. That's the whole fucking game. So when people are like, oh, they only talk about themselves, I'm like, they need a little bit of deprogramming. But also, you know, you're kind of told from day one, like, promote the fuck out of yourself or drown. But also, if you are working in an office, if there's somebody in charge of whatever files, you can't get mad at them for not refilling the snack station. You can't, like, you can't expect everybody to do every job. And you can't, you also can't expect that, like, socially, emotionally, you can't expect everyone to provide everything. Like, you know, I don't know. I have a close friend who was just saying recently, somebody got mad at her for, they thought, not being a great friend. And she's like, sorry, I don't remember birthdays. It's not my thing. I've never remembered birthdays. I never will remember your birthday. She's like, but if you're in the hospital, I'm staying the night with you. She's like, if you need a place to stay, you're staying at my house. If you like, she's like, that's the friend I am. So sorry, I don't fill every fucking category. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's it. That's the whole thing with all people in all situations and all relationships everywhere. Like, everybody's not going to check every box, you know?
Do you feel that pressure as an entertainer that you're supposed to, I don't mean from like an emotional standpoint, but I mean from a jack of all trades, like you're trying to be a Swiss Army knife. Do you feel that pressure as, especially as a comic, because they expect you all to have a podcast and, you know, a tight hour that changes every month and, you know, all of the things like, do you feel that, or am I just perceiving that wrong?
A little bit. I'll say a medium amount. I feel that, but I'm also learning to kind of just say like, yeah, that's not for me. And not for me. Like, I'm learning to not add qualifiers to thing. Like it's not for me and that's fine. And it's neutral. It like, so many people are like, sign up on TikTok, get on TikTok. And I'm like, I don't think that's how my brain works. And I think there are people that are so fucking good at it. I love TikTok. I like watching people's TikToks. Vine wasn't my thing either. I'm like, but I do well on Twitter. You know, I do well with more heady stuff, and that's fine. I think, I don't know if the industry thinks it's fine, but I think it's fine. You know,
So you don't feel pressure to, you know, sign up on TikTok and Clubhouse and, you know, all of the things. You have decided, look, Twitter works for you. That's enough, no matter what the industry says to you. But we have to have, you have to have this, you have to have that. Because
I feel a little bit of pressure, but I also feel like the people saying you have to do this and this and this,
they're chasing their tails,
aren't A, being realistic.
That's right.
And I think too, a lot of people are just talking out of their ass. Like,
right.
I had a manager I met with years ago who was a huge dum-dum, by the way. And he was like, you got to get on Periscope. You're not on Periscope. And I'm like, no, why would I, what am I going to fuck? Also, what am I going to Periscope? I'm not in fucking Brazil right now. I'm in the Valley. For me personally, I don't agree with the model of making content just for the sake of content. I'm like, I'm not just going to live stream my trip to the grocery store unless there's a robbery happening. Like, then I'm like, oh, I might film this, you know?
I might need to film this.
Like, I want something to be interesting. I'm not just going to like post the people that hop on to, God bless them. But the people that hop on Instagram Live and they're like, just like eating a salad. And they're like, so, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm like, call your mom. Stop this. You're like, what are you doing?
Phone a friend, you psycho.
You're saying nothing funny or interesting or revealing to thousands of people. And people, also people are tuning in and I'm like, what is this? This is not okay.
It's the Truman Show. Yeah, a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Truman Show, but boring. At least there was like commercials in the Truman Show, you know?
Okay, so if you could look back over your career, were there moments that felt insignificant or bad or both? Or do you have examples of both at the time and that ended up being huge and significant and wow, life-changing and you just didn't know? I love that you're pausing as if you didn't know that the question that you ask all of your guests was about to come up. Like, oh, this is so performative. Go ahead, Lisa, take your time.
I was trying to sneak in an extra joke and then I couldn't think of one. That's really what that pause was.
That's real.
And I was like, how do I fucking call back the mouse game on this one?
Well, figure it out, because now they've set up the expectations. Here you go.
Well, and here I am. I found myself the mouse. Once again, I am the carny. Well, you know what? I hope I get a lot of people angrily emailing me that how dare I speak ill of carnies.
Is that who you think your felons. Niche audience is? Like, you think you got a lot of people that are carny defenders in your audience? Says a lot about you.
If I have one listener outside the carny space for this podcast, I will be shocked.
So will I.
Shocked. And by the carny space, I'm also sweeping truckers into that.
which I'm sure they love.
So I would say an insignificant or something that I thought was insignificant, and maybe this is very silly, but like I remember the joke that got Nikki Glaser to follow me on Twitter.
Can you tell us?
There's that inspirational thing like jump and the net will appear. And I tweeted, jump and the noose will appear.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And that got Nikki on board. I love her.
Somebody retweeted it and then she immediately followed. And
bless her.
Listen, she saw something else previous to that, but that was definitely,
that clinched
it. It was like 10 minutes later, she followed me. And then we became friends from there. And, you know, that changed my life in a lot of ways because she had me on her show a lot and she's vouched for me a lot. And that's how I, you know, had anything with Sirius, was through Nikki. And, I would say something that felt bad was in 2019, I was really close to getting my dream job and I didn't get it. And I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. I was like, I can't stay in LA any longer. I'm going to murder somebody. Like, not I'm going to quit, but like, I have to leave this pressure cooker right now. And that's when I started booking my tour, my big overseas tour that led to where I recorded my album and like performed for the troops and did all these other things. It was literally like, I have to get out of here before I have a very big public meltdown, like, but without the kind of like fun e-entertainment coverage, you know, just a meltdown of somebody without success. So yeah, I was like, it was like, I have to do something where I'm in control and no one can tell me no. And no one can tell me at the last minute, oh, sorry, we went another way. Like, that's just it. I just had to fucking have control over my own destiny.
So that felt obviously horrifically terrible at the time to get that rejection.
And it was so scary planning that tour too, because I was like, what am I fucking doing? I immediately put in my 2 weeks at the restaurant job I had at the time. And I was like, I'm just going to make this work. And I remember there was a couple of regulars that came in, Bill and Melinda, who I still am in touch with and I like them a lot. And I was getting ready to leave. It was like, I left, like the end of April was my last week there. And I was getting ready to, like, it was like approaching that date. And I was like, I have this big tour. What if I come back and it doesn't work out? And I was like, what if I have to come back here? And Melinda was like, are you out of your fucking mind? She's like, something will come up. Okay. She's like, you're not going to have to come back here. She's like, something's going to take off. She's like, this is going to lead to something else. And I came back and got staffed on Jim Jefferies' show. And then that was it. And I haven't looked back since. And, yeah. And it was like, I'm so glad that I didn't. Listen, had I gotten that job, I'd be an Emmy Award winner right now, because it's an Emmy Award winning show many, many, many times over.
It's all right. We're moving past it. We're going to keep it moving. We're going to keep it moving.
We're going to keep moving past it. but I got a lot of personal satisfaction. I went to 5 new countries. I performed for the troops in Jordan. I recorded an album. Like, I've done so much that only I can be proud of. And by only I can be proud of, it doesn't mean like somebody else is ashamed of it, but it's like, I don't share that experience. I don't share the credit with anyone else. It's just mine, which feels really special.
Yeah.
Sorry to be corny, but it does.
We're going to keep it moving past the cornball stuff. Okay. So those are the examples you have. Did something happen that you, in the moment, you were like, here we go, baby, this is, everything is fantastic, we have aligned, and then it was like a tut-tut-tut, just kidding.
Oh, everything. Everything after. Literally everything.
So fucking honest. Okay, great. Yeah.
I also allow myself to get very excited. So like I could get an email right now that's like, Lisa, would you like to audition for it? And I'd be like, that's it. Here it comes.
I do. Here's a big one.
It's every time. And it's like I'm the most naive child. You would think I was living in the woods somewhere and somebody emailed me and was like, would you like this opportunity? Like the fact that I haven't been hosed by a fucking Nigerian prince is miraculous, honestly, because I get so excited. So excited. And I think every single thing is going to be the big one. And it's not.
But how that's so interesting because your mentality, you're able to detach from the need for laughs. You're able to detach from the
because I'm not funny. So you have to detach, Kate. Do you understand?
But you know what, Lisa? I'm really proud of how honest that was and how real that was. Therapy's working. You know, if there wasn't a moment that proved it before right now, that moment proved it. Good job, girl. You're right. But how come it doesn't apply to, you know, that sort of Zen state that you mentioned before? How come it doesn't apply to the random email or the random opportunity or the, you know, packet for the dream job or whatever? Because
it's so fun to get excited about things. I mean, too. And those things get me down when I don't get them. They feel crushing, but it's so fun to get excited. I mean, yeah. It feels like you're roller skating on mushrooms or something. It's the most fun feeling to just let yourself think of all of the possibilities, you know? A lot of time, like, and also you get so many opportunities that feel crazy like that in entertainment. So many things come up where it feels like it could be life-changing that you always have that like other hit coming, that like big dopamine hit is just around the corner.
It is. It's chasing the dragon. We're all doing it. It's terrible.
Absolutely.
Okay. So your comedy's gone. You're never going to be a comic again. What job do you have?
Oh, you asked me this on your podcast. I know. I'm building boats, baby.
I just love this answer.
If you think I have not actively pursued this as a side job, because I've often thought like, oh, well, I can just do comedy at night. And then during the day, I could build canoes. And let me tell you, zero people are asking me to build canoes with them. And I'm fucking upset about it. I actually recently jokingly got angry with a friend because she wouldn't let me build a deck for her. Here's the thing. My whole family, they're all iron workers, and we'll drive around a city and they'll be like, see that bridge? I built it. See that? I welded that. And I just want to be able to do that. I want to be like, see that thing? I did it. Instead, I'm like, hear those thoughts in my head? They're scary. Those are mine. Like, that's...
These are terrifying.
I created this reality, bitch. And they're like, yeah, what?
I'm the mouse now. Wait, no, I don't want to be the mouse.
No, I want to be the carny. Wait, I'm the quarter? Hold on.
What am I?
Lost in my own.
Okay. Example. Well, okay. If you were going to mentor someone that really wanted to get into comedy and really...
First of all, I would say, no, bitch, I don't need more competition.
Nope,
but
that's
what was
it.
The rest
that's
of it?
The whole question. You've answered it. I'm so excited. That's the best answer. No, bitch. Because they're probably going to be fetuses. Okay, if your childhood self could meet you, what do you think she would think of you now?
She'd be like, what? I think she would be confused. I think she'd be like, why doesn't your career incorporate tap dancing? I don't understand. Like, you went into entertainment, but you're not in a leotard. That doesn't seem right.
Something's not tracking.
I think she would be like, why don't you own a house? And then if I told her how much rent was, I think she might drop dead.
So your lifestyle would kill her. Okay.
Yeah. I think she'd be like, first of all, you should be having way more Dairy Queen.
Live your life.
Way more Dairy Queen. You mean to tell me you don't live with your parents anymore and you're not just like riding your bike around eating ice cream all day? Bullshit. What a bullshit life you have.
Anything else to say about her?
No, I think she'd be glad I was, in LA.
Yeah.
Around palm trees. She'd be like, you did that.
You did it.
That's great. I think she'd be excited, but I do think she'd be confused also at like how little I go for a swim now as an adult, which I really should be doing more. If it weren't for this fucking hair I have to take care of all the time, I'd probably, you know, lots of things.
Sound like a dog. Okay.
She would be very hurt that I don't live with my Barbies.
Equally disappointed that you didn't marry Ken.
Yeah, but she would be very, very thrilled that I have a dog. She'd be thrilled that I have a dog and that I think she would be confused. I don't even know what she would think of stand-up. Because I think, to my memory, the only stand-up I ever saw growing up was that little bit of stand-up at the beginning of Seinfeld. So I think she'd be like, I don't understand. What?
And if you could have found success like the, you know, week or month that you landed in LA, mm-hmm. knowing just what you knew then, having none of the extra wisdom or anything now, and you were handed an opportunity then, would you, if you could change the past, would you want that for yourself? Yeah, you don't have wisdom.
Yeah, are you kidding me? I'm still in debt. Are you out of your mind?
She just moved the mic so care. Close to her mouth.
I don't care if I like became an absolute tyrant, because I'm sure I'd have found happiness somehow. I'd probably be riding my bike and fucking eating ice cream Billy Madison style on a big, on 12 acres of land in Malibu.
In the middle of Bel Air or Malibu. Yeah, great. Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely have like scrambled brain syndrome like everyone else has. But I don't know. I would probably be happy.
What do you think?
Yeah, I would like to have succeeded sooner. And by sooner, I mean I would like to have succeeded.
Full stop, period, end of sentence.
wherever that is. I don't know.
What does that look like?
I assume it's coming down the pike at some point.
But like, okay, well, define that. No, tell her. What is success? What is you
being like? A lot of
like-
money. A lot of fucking money.
So if you won the lottery,
I'm
you're
sorry,
like,
you thought this was going to be some Buddhist statement? No, it's gobs and gobs of money, because money equals power. And when you have a little bit of power, you can be like, I'm going to choose my own projects. Like I love friends that are that have, we'll say good income. We'll just say good, because that's a broad friends that are like, I just make my own stuff. And I'm like, yeah, bitch, you're making $500,000 a year. I make my own stuff on my iPhone. And everyone's like, why is it so poor quality? Well, it's so poor quality because I can't hire a sound guy. Okay. I have $9. I guess success to me is like, I would love to fucking have a big old house, and I would like to be making things with my friends. That's success, and making my own projects with my friends rather than like still trying to be hired on things, which look, I'd like to be hired on something. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think for me, I'm like, I'll feel like I made it when I have a fucking house with a pool and I can like go fuck off to Bora Bora with my friends for a week and I can pay for it all. Like that is success to me. Money.
Money. Success and money. That's great. And mm-hmm. do you think, and we'll wrap up, but do you mm-hmm. think that if you could have chosen, or if you thought that you could get the gobs of money and the house doing something else with friends that wasn't entertainment, do you think that you would have the same level of happiness at that level of success? If it weren't, you wouldn't be writing on a show, you wouldn't be doing TV or movies, but you would have found something else, like in tech or something, and you found a bunch of friends in tech, and now you have a house, and now you can't fuck off with your friends. Is that success for you?
Here's the problem. When you say friends in tech, I just imagine just the most boring, homogenous people.
Okay, well, don't think of like transplanting.
If I could have my same friend, if I could have fun ass friends,
yeah,
I guess, yeah. As long as like, I don't know. I still think I would be like a funny person or a weirdo in that scenario. You know, like I think if I was doing something else, I don't know. I just don't like people in other fields. You know what? No, this isn't fair, because I have friends in a lot of different fields, but I think like, you know, I might have two friends that work in fashion that are cool and fun to talk to. And then anyone else I've ever met. And this is like, this is an example. I'm not saying fashion specifically, everyone. Okay. So please don't come for me. I already got carnies on my ass, but it's like
and mice.
Carnies, mice people, so many. So I think I just can't imagine a world where I have as much fun with people that don't want to make people laugh.
That's real.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, my friends are always cutting it up, especially like, especially when times get tough, when somebody can just like make a joke about it, that makes everything better. It just makes everything better. And I am very grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's probably a good way to end, because you don't sound as crazy with a line like, I'm grateful for that. So we probably shouldn't end on Carney Mice talk. We should end on your gratitude. Is there now, can you real quick?
Just... Oh, here's another definition of success. And this is absolutely, I'm not joking. This is not a joke.
I know. Go.
Back to the carny thing. I fucking love a carnival. Christ. I love a carnival so much. My other marker for success, owning a Ferris wheel. Because I don't know why, I don't know why you would bother being a multimillionaire and then you just have like grass in your yard. Put a fucking, put a mouse game there. Put a Ferris wheel in your yard. Get a tilt-a-whirl. Get a fucking cotton candy machine. Yes, I have priced all of these things.
You have just described, what was it, Neverland Ranch? Like, are you using it to trick kids, Lisa? Is this where you confess on some shit?
I don't want kids anywhere near me. This is just for adults. I want Neverland Ranch, but all my friends are there and we're all on mushrooms. That's all I want every day forever.
I was just about to say, for your birthday, you did go to Disneyland on mushrooms and said that's the only way to do it.
Oh, it wasn't my birthday. It was just for life. And it was the best day of my life. It was just because.
Oh my God.
Which, by the way, everyone go to Disneyland on mushrooms. It'll be the best day of your life. I can't recommend it enough.
Well, real quick, just because I am interviewing you about your, or in your own podcast space, how did you come up with this podcast idea and why did you want to do it?
Oh, I just want to trap people and talk to them.
Oh, right on.
It's pretty easy. Low stakes. I'm just like, I just want to talk to people. And you can't, it sounds completely psychotic to be like, hey, person that I think is funny that I admire, can we just sit down and talk for an hour? They would say no, and I'm calling the police. But if you say, can we sit down and talk for an hour and I'm going to record it and let other people listen to it, they're like, oh yeah, of course.
Isn't that interesting? Like,
that's literally why.
Okay. So you were just like, I'm just going to talk to cool people about the cool shit that they're doing.
Yeah.
Well, I love that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Well, is that it? I mean, what else you got to say? Probably something weird.
I think that's it.
That's it. All right. Well, folks, thank you so much for listening to Long Story Long with Lisa Curry and her insignificant and not at all famous friend, Kate Gaffney, as the temporary host this week. And next week, you will hear another famous person on the podcast and not have to be like, who's Kate? Oh, wait, real quick. If you Google me, I'm not that bitch in Pennsylvania with a fucking band or whatever the fuck. That's not me. Okay? That's not me. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Kate.
I'm bitter.
Thanks so much for listening. Once again, that was Kate Gaffney. You can find her on Twitter and Instagram at TheKateGaffney. I am Lisa Curry. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa_Curry and on Instagram at OlympianLisaCurry. I just want to say really quick, a lot of things are starting to open up now. I'm really excited. I'm finally fully vaccinated and I'm hoping to hit some clubs this fall. If you want to see me in your city, call the club that's in your city and request me. That's how this works. I think I'm not entirely sure, but I'm sure it doesn't hurt. So thanks again for listening and we'll see you next week. Bye.